Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian. A rare Monday podcast, but given everything going on, I wanted to get some people on here in a busy time of the sports. So David Purdom, who does a wonderful job for ESPN.com and all the ESPN platforms, is going to join me momentarily. Recap the NFL weekend. We had a wild finish with Bears Saints, the touchdown, the walk-off TD. What that means for the books and the no extra point thing, and just how the books did. Obviously, the Steelers were upset at home by the Browns, and then Saturday's results. So a lot of interesting betting dominoes moving forward, and then also look ahead to next week. And also the national championship game tonight, like, tons of money, as you would imagine, all the books, like, where's the sharp money? And it's kind of split is interesting. And so we'll talk more with David about that. And also NHL season preview with the inimitable duo of Emily Kaplan and Greg Wyshynski. Both of our NHL writers do a fantastic job. You might know the Puck Daddy from ESPN's Daily Wagers. So a lot of interesting dialogue. We have a couple futures, or a handful of futures, I should say, for this upcoming season, which starts on Wednesday. So we want to give you a little bit of time to listen and all that fun stuff. So enjoy the pod. Purdom first. We'll get with Murray later in the week. But thanks for everyone to downloading and listening on a Monday. And before we get into today's episode, I want to tell everyone about another ESPN podcast, The Mina Kime Show, featuring Lenny. Mina talks all things football with her unique brand of humor and insight. Her friends join each episode to talk about the NFL's latest storylines, along with her football-loving dog, Lenny, making frequent contributions. Make sure you download and subscribe to The Mina Kime Show featuring Lenny, as well as Behind the Bets on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know the leagues. I know the teams. I know these players. I know this wonderful game called football.
Time now to welcome in a gentleman you see and hear across all ESPN platforms. David Purdom, how are you, sir?
Great, Doug. How are you?
Good. I was chuckling yesterday, and I even tweeted, "This is nuts. Bears lost by 12. Looks like David Purdom has another story to write. LOL." And sure enough, you got on the job, and some work came across your desk, so to speak, on that Sunday afternoon. Bears drive the field 99.5 yards after a Drew Brees touchdown was nullified on review on fourth down. And then the final play of the game, a touchdown, but because of the rules, no two-point conversion needed. So if it's not a one- or two-point game or whatever, no conversion if the touchdown scored as time expired. And what does that mean for the books? And you got to the bottom of it.
It was not good for the books. They were very lopsided on the Saints. A lot of guys said that the Bears covering would be their biggest decision of the day. Some of them said biggest decision of the weekend. So when the Bears did not attempt an extra point, which is because of a rule change in 2018 after that famous Saints-Vikings game where Stephon Diggs caught the last second touchdown, the Saints and Vikings both had to come back onto the field to attempt the extra point because the rules then did require it. So after that season, after that game, they made a change where they no longer have to take on a play that a touchdown that ends the game on the final play of the game. They no longer have to kick an extra point or do a two-point conversion if it does not impact the outcome. And of course, the closing consensus number was 11 on that game. The Saints ended up winning by 12. So there were some Bears bettors there that were kind of disturbed by them not coming out to kick the extra point.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. It all stems from the Minneapolis Miracle, right? They're like, what are we doing here? Why do we have this rule? So smartly, the NFL changed it. So my question for you, and we saw a bunch of line move, right? It was like 9 throughout the week, then got up to 10, then 10.5, and then 11. So the books, I mean, would they have even benefited it if it lands 11? Because a lot of times the books, especially like, you know, this kind of situation, like we know the public was on the Saints, and obviously that's why the line went up, but sometimes it's like, it wouldn't matter. It's just money changing hands. So did they need 11? Did they need 10?
They needed to cover 11. you know, it wasn't a giant, because the line didn't get there till 11 till on Sunday into the hours leading up to the game.
Right.
So a bulk of the bets were on a smaller number, so it wouldn't have really mattered. MGM characterized the difference between the Saints winning by 12 and 11 as a low five-figure decision against the house. So not a significant thing, unless you're, of course, holding a Bears ticket for plus 11, and then you're probably a little frustrated.
Yeah, I mean, some you know, we talked to Preston a lot. Some of these guys, the math modelers, are like, hey, at 11, it's a buy. 10.5, it's not. Things like that. 11's a little bit more key than we realize. Things along those lines. Okay, so Browns-Steelers. I was under the impression that that could have been a huge swing for the book because of all the favorites. But, you know, we had some dogs barking throughout the weekend. So it wasn't significant. So we saw some drop down to 5 at kickoff at most shops. Some of that was just, you know, players coming back for the Browns that they weren't sure in the market, just being the market. How did just the Browns outright over such a public team like the Steelers?
One of the biggest wins of the weekend for sure. PointsBet, it was the biggest win of the season of any of the, of the weekend. You know, I was like you. That line was about, what, 4, 4.5 when the news of the COVID issues the Browns were facing. I thought it was going to keep going up. It went to 6. I thought we'd surely get to 7, and then it started coming back down and got close, as low as 5 at the closing number. So there were some people there that thought the Browns were going to stay within the number, and they did so.
I'm not saying it's to the same degree, but it did remind me of that Sunday night Patriots-Ravens game earlier in the year when the world was on Baltimore and the line didn't move at all. It didn't budge. I was like, oh, boy. And the fact when the line started coming back down, I was like, oh, gosh, this should be interesting. And then obviously first snap and things just unravel from the start. Saturday, a large reason for the limited line movement in that Saints. I mean, basically, I was told Sunday night, if we need the Steelers as a house and all the favorites win, then that thing's going to be on the move. But dogs barked. I mean, even the closing number of the Washington game, that was a backdoor. So you're looking at dogs 3-0 on Saturday. Bills, you know, I think the key one was the Bills not covering, right?
Yes. That was absolutely one of the biggest decisions for a lot of the books. You know, the Westgate guy said that the Colts covering the spread was their best decision of the weekend. If the Colts would have won outright, it could have been one of their best decisions of the season. So there was a lot of money, lopsided action on Buffalo. All three underdogs did cover the closing line, which was pretty remarkable because if you go back over the last four seasons, including that Saturday, underdogs were 14-1 against the spread in wild card games just over the last four seasons. It evened out just a little bit on Sunday with 2 out of 3 favorites covering, but still over the last four seasons of wild cards, 15-3 against the spread for the underdog. And that really is kind of a trend that's been, you know, going on throughout the season. This regular season, underdogs covered about 56% of the time. That was the second best mark of such mark for underdogs in any season since 2006. So pretty crazy.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I did some research for various pieces we've done and NFL. So the home field has sort of been inflated by the betting market. Like, it's not that significant. I'll just rattle off a few findings. Basically, the perception is, you know, it's like, oh, the home, it's like, first of all, the technology now with like the communication between the road quarterback and the sideline, you know, you can hear things up until, what is it, 15 seconds left on the play clock. The travel, right? The travel is so advanced that it's, you know, whatever it used to do to the body is not as pronounced now. And there's just, you know, back when I was growing up, it was like, oh, 3 points for the home team. Like, with key numbers and stuff, it's really not. It's like 1.8 with no fans, 1.6, like that kind of stuff is what you're hearing. And so, I mean, dogs, you know, have covered more. So dogs have covered above 500. What I think it's like 7 of the last 8 years and 14 of the last 17. So, yeah, dogs. I mean, road teams won outright. Excuse me, road teams have covered. I said dogs. Road teams, to be clear. So there's just a little bit of an exaggeration, and I found this really interesting. Like, everyone's like the Seattle, the 12th man, right?
Right.
So much of it is actually roster construction, right? So the year that they had that run, I think it was a 5-year run of the Legion of Boom, where everyone's like, oh, the 12th man. They were like 34-11 or whatever that adds up to for 8. You know, 8 times 5 is 40. So it has to add up to 34-6, I think, is the number what they were at home over those 5 years, where they went to 2 Super Bowls. They won at least 1 playoff game each of those years. But then the roster, they started to lose some of those guys. Then they were about like, I think 14 and 11 or something like that, or whatever it is, right? 14 and 10, I think it was, for the next 3 years when the roster wasn't there. So, I mean, as much as the home field you would think matters and like players are creatures of habit, things like that, it's really just a byproduct of like really good rosters playing at home. Like, I mean, yeah, that's essentially what it is. So it's been fascinating. And that's what the NFL, we had a, our NFL department did a piece on that. So, the whole thing is interesting. How the market reacts and the public and all that. So let's spin it forward to next weekend. I think the most interesting thing to me is the last game. It's that Tampa New Orleans. We're looking at like -3, -15, or -20 across the market here to a Saints team that's won by double digits and really kind of dominated this Bucs squad.
Yeah, I mean, that line opened as high as 5.5 at the Westgate. They were a little bit off what the market was. Most people opened around 4, 4.5, maybe a 3.5. It steadily come down. The Westgate reported taking instant sharp action on the Buccaneers when they opened up much higher. A lot of that is guys that will see any number that's off the market and then we'll go ahead and take it. So it's down to 3, -115. And we just saw a pretty big move on the total. You know, the total opened at 49.5 and it just got steamed up to 52. So definite some movement there. I wonder how much of the interest on the Buccaneers is people playing into the cliche that it's impossible to beat a team three times in a year. You know, what were the numbers on the Saints Bucks before? It was 4.5. I think the Saints were what, small dogs when they crushed them in Tampa Bay. So yeah, that number does look a little low to me as well.
You know, it just surprises, right? Because people are, we have recency bias a lot. So, but I will say Brady and the Bucs look much better now. Who have they played? But I think Brady's just the zip on his ball. Like everything looks just sharper than we've seen. But Brady didn't cover in primetime again, backdoor. So it's 0-5 ATS this year for what we have joked around here in the pod for Morty Seinfeld. So I will say this, the one seat, like how much is the rest, right? Like we obviously only two teams get rest this year as opposed to previous seasons. Pretty high numbers. There's a little bit of a tax. Chiefs laying 10 to this. What we're going to find out if it's an undermanned Cleveland team or not. And then Green Bay laying 7 against a banged up Rams team. We get to check Aaron Donald and obviously the quarterback situation. So those lines feel a little high, particularly the Packers line. But it's understandable. Have you talked to bookmakers in terms of like what they expect the action to be throughout the week? I know you mentioned some Tampa sharp money, but anything else?
They mentioned that they really look interested in that Aaron Donald injury and see how he is. You know, it's kind of, you don't often see a defensive tackle make such an impact, but obviously he is an elite player and a difference maker for the Rams, especially going up against Aaron Rodgers. If the Rams do not have him to get in there and get some pressure on them, I would see that line going over 7 if we get some news on him. So I think that's the key injury. We'll obviously watch the Browns and see how their situation plays out, see how many guys come back, although it didn't seem that last week's the guys missing from last week really cost them anything.
And what should be an extremely compelling game is Ravens-Bills. 2.5 at the Ralph and what should be a frigid Saturday night in Western New York. And I mean, that total feels high. It's 50 at some places and just given the how Baltimore's defense played. But I think that's interesting that it's below 3. And I know Baltimore looked solid yesterday, but they didn't look dominant. I mean, obviously Lamar Jackson with his big playability really changed the game with that touchdown run. I believe it was 48 yards. But do you have a feel of talking to guys if this one's going to go up or down?
I know I saw a little bit of early movement toward the Ravens. It went down to 2 at a couple books, Circa, in fact, which we both all know that they cater to some of the sharper sports bettors, and it's down to 2 there. I feel like people think the Ravens' ceiling, if they play their absolute best game, is probably a little bit better than if Buffalo were to play their last game. I wouldn't be surprised if this number comes down a little bit.
Makes sense. Makes sense. I mean, I think the Ravens getting the full 3, as we've talked about a lot on the BegaCast yesterday, is 3 is the most common margin of victory in the NFL over the last 5 years, 14 and like change, like 14.3% of the games. What I've learned also is 4 is not common at all, tied for 9th most. So you think like the football numbers, but it's just because of 2-point conversions in the fourth quarter, things like that. 4, who kicks the extra point to go down 4 when, you know, it's in the fourth quarter at all. So. But, yeah, that 3 is that key number we talk so much. Okay, let's spin it forward to tonight. I think we did enough of what's going on for the weekend. Now, obviously, Bama, Bama, Ohio State. Now, this line's trickling up a little bit, but I was fascinated by what you wrote. Is just there seems to be split action.
very, very even. I think the Westgate had two more tickets on Alabama than Ohio State. And then over at MGM, they were separated by just seven tickets, a little few more bets on Ohio State over there. Now, the money is a little more lopsided towards Bama. There are some bigger bets on Bama at most sports books. Like you said, that number has grown to nine. It was as low as seven at one point, but steadily ticked up. A lot of the books that I talked to when they posted this number, when it came out as 7.5 or an eight, they thought that was a little bit of overreaction because the look ahead lines before the semifinals were complete, they had Alabama as almost like an 11-point favorite over Ohio State. So making it a 4-point move, dropping it down to seven, a lot of the odds makers thought that was a little bit more of an overreaction to Ohio State's performance against Clemson, and bettors seem to think so as well as they're driving the market up.
Yeah, I grabbed some seven on that day. I guess it was the day after January 2nd. I think it was a Saturday. I couldn't believe it. I even got some 6.5s, like minus 15.
Wow.
So I was just stunned. I just happened to be at my computer in that like 30-minute window where things lit up. Then it went 7.5 and 8, solid 8, and then now to your point. I think it's going to be a great game. I do think Alabama outlasts them. I just trust them more. But it is interesting. And I read a quote. Murray, obviously a friend of the program here, just said, he's like, I can't remember a game with this much volume that split.
Yep. He did see some bigger bets from some of the house players, not necessarily their sharp guys. There's some VIP clients on Ohio State. So they had a little bit more money on Ohio State over there. But just the volume of the game and the number of bets is very evenly divided.
I mean, that's a dream. That's a dream, sure, for bookmakers and all things, when you factor all that in. And one thing I was just sniffing around last night, I had a kick. I mean, some of these props are obviously really interesting, but the yes to score a touchdown in some of these shops, I mean, one place is minus 3,300 for Najee Harris to score a touchdown. Now, you can't bet the no, right? You can't bet the no. So there's just an incredible minus 1,250 for Devontae Smith because we have this 75 total or wherever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And then these studs, the Heisman Trophy winner, and it's hilarious. But when Najee Harris scored five times in the SEC championship game, other guys did not. So it's something – one of these guys may not score. So it's just funny the tax that you're paying on such a public game. And when the total is so high like it is at 75, you're going to have some crazy numbers in the prop market.
Yeah, you are. And you mentioned the total at 75. You know, the most of the money is on the under. And that's one of the rare times we see a game like this, a high profile game where there's more money on the under. Now, I expect the public will probably latch on to some over money and come in later today. But heading into game day, there was more money on the under throughout the market.
Yeah, I mean, Preston said it on the show. It's like, your first instinct's bet under, but like, there's a reason this total is that high. These offenses, Ohio State or Bama's offense, since FBI track stuff, and I believe I'm repeating what Brad Edwards told us on this podcast, since FBI in 05, this is the most dominant team. So it's all in relation to that particular season and the most dominant offense they've had in their entire database. So think of that, Tua with Alabama, right? We've seen some prolific offenses, but they've just been churning out stuff. And like I was talking to odds maker, like the props on like Devontae Smith, like the last couple games is just like insane, like 138.5. I mean, he's like, I've never seen this kind of stuff. So, all right, my man. Well, I chuckled at your extra work. Do you kind of like shrug your shoulders and breathe out a sigh when like something like the Bears Saints ending happens?
You can almost feel it happening. Yeah. In fact, our fellow colleague, Mr. Behrman, texted me, you're getting ready for an all-time bad beat. And sure enough, 11 play, 99-yard drive, capped off by a remarkable one-handed catch.
God forbid I step up and write one of these, I could have, I guess, on that one. I probably should have pitched it just because I know you had a lot in your plate. But a lot of times it's all you, my friend, all you. Thank you for adjusting your schedule and helping me out. I think our viewers will appreciate this, and we'll look forward to the next recap, likely Tuesday morning.
Excellent. Good luck this week.
Go pick me out a winner, Bobby.
All right. Time now to welcome in true friends of the program. At least one is, because I talk to him all the time on Daily Wager. And then we're welcoming in a new face, Emily Kaplan. You and I have not had the pleasure of meeting in person, but I'm excited to discuss a little hockey. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry that I don't have a fun puck-related nickname to give myself, but not everyone can.
Yeah. I mean, the Puck Daddy is just the man. We're trying to do win streaks the other day on what our longest one was on Daily Wager. We thought six was, and then researchers like, nope, Puck Daddy has nine. So he's dished out some winners over the years. So that is certainly a good thing. Greg, welcome.
Thank you. The bubble was really good for me, man. I was able to kind of crack the bubble code during the summer as far as like how these games are going to play out and how the series are going to play out. But this 56-game NHL regular season that we're about to enter into with empty arenas outside of four of the buildings, it's the great unknown, Doug. It is the new frontier for hockey wagering.
It sure is, and we're learning that in the NBA in this early season with the abbreviated schedule, condensed schedule. So yeah, 56 games for the NHL. Like these according to Caesars William Hill, you got to play at least 54 of them in order for points and points bets and everything to be valid. Futures still good to go, but Emily, we'll start with you. Your first play, and we can kind of all react.
Yeah, so I see the Bruins have a 69.5 for points total, and I would take the under on that. Now, this is the second highest total that I'm seeing in the Eastern Conference, and the Lightning obviously have the highest. And the reason the Lightning is so high is because their division sucks. But you bring the Bruins in, now they've got to play the Islanders, the Flyers, the Capitals, the Penguins, the Rangers could make a little bit of a run. And I know a lot of people in the league are openly wondering whether the Bruins are the same team they were last year. They have a lot of losses on defense. Zdeno Chara, Torey Krug, one side of their defense is completely raw, no experience. We're also wondering whether Pastrnak is going to take a step back. He's not starting the season as he's still recovering from hip surgery. So I like a lot of those teams, like I mentioned, the Flyers, the Islanders, the Rangers, even to steal some wins from the Bruins this year. And I don't think they're going to hit that.
You know, if the NBA is any blueprint, a lot of these teams are not dominating. We've seen, like, I don't want to say more parity, but the runaway trains, so to speak, are not happening. I don't know if that's – there's a lot of theories out there, but, you know, without being a crowd, they're saying, like, oh, they're not as motivated when they're down and they don't come back. So it's interesting. But, like, if anything –
not the NBA. They're going to be motivated.
I know. It's just a fascinating new kind of animal without these crowd. Because we're seeing like really good teams that usually dominate are like losing a few more games early on than they typically do. All right, Puck Daddy, the pressure's on for you.
Well, like Emily said, the Central Division is not good. You might have heard the NHL recently sold naming rights to all of their divisions. I think this one would have been a perfect place for like Hefty Bags or maybe Waste Management to name the division. The Central's not good, and I think that's going to benefit one team in particular, and that's the Carolina Hurricanes. I'm going to take them over 68.5, -110. The Central could have two of the worst teams in hockey in Chicago and Detroit. Detroit, traditionally not good. Chicago's goaltending, probably the worst tandem in the league. Carolina had a .596 winning percentage, or rather points percentage last year in a much tougher division. And without their best offensive defenseman, Dougie Hamilton, for 21 games, all we're asking for here, Doug, is to play at a .612 points percentage clip. Given that they have two good goaltenders, given they're going to have a healthy Dougie Hamilton, given how bad the division is, I think they are the clear number two choice behind Tampa, and the over 68.5 rather is a pretty solid bet.
All right. Makes perfect sense. I like that. I like how you're like talking to me and kind of calling me out and getting my attention, really captivating the audience. I like that. my first one, and I've talked about in all these podcasts on how like I have my wheelhouse and then I outsource and kind of glean wisdom. So one thing I've been passed to me is the Red Wings over 43.5, which is a little surprising. They've had the worst record last year since the salary cap was introduced. Four straight years of missing the playoffs after they had that run. I believe it was 25 years, but new management here. And it's a little concerning considering they didn't even go over this number 43.5 in 70 games last year. So I'm asking them to do it this year in 56, but added a lot of veterans, including the goaltending, which is obviously an issue. And I think the young core is going to step up. Emily, am I crazy for this over?
You're not that crazy. You know, Steve Yzerman has taken over, and everyone in the league expects him to build this team into a winner, but he won't put a timetable on when they're going to start to look good. Last year, they did not look good, and it was almost by design. But this year, I think there's an extra level of motivation. You know, Dylan Larkin, if you're talking about intangibles, he's playing. He wants to be named the captain. That top line is really good. And I do think that the blue line specifically, there was a lot of guys that Yzerman got, like Mark Stahl, you know, unloading on salary from New York, Stetcher from Vancouver, that's going to help this team. John Merrill from Vegas, that's another good guy that's going to help them on D.
awesome.
Yeah, and Doug, in a 56 game sprint, it's all about goaltending. And they shipped out Jimmy Howard, who I think had like 20 losses last year. They brought in Thomas Greiss from the Islanders. Him and Jonathan Bernier are going to be all right. You could make the argument that they have better goaltending than Chicago does if you're looking for a proxy within the same division. And that alone is going to help them boost their point total. I don't know if it's going to get them over the bar you're setting for them, but they're going to be a better team than they were last year.
The floor will be higher in my eyes. Emily, do you have another futures pick?
I do. This one is for Stanley Cup winner. And I saw Washington Capitals at plus 1,800, 18-1 odds. And I was like, I would take that in a heartbeat. Now, I think most fans are going to say, well, the Capitals have looked super stale since winning the cup in 2018. Like, what's going to be new this year? Well, the Todd Reirden experiment didn't work out. There was their coach. The veterans, including Ovechkin, went to management's like, we want someone to light the fire under us. We want to restore that urgency. So they get Peter Laviolette, who's a total hard ass. They get Zdeno Chara, who's like that version of that, who's just going to be on the bench and not a lot of accountability. You know, and then you get Ovechkin, who is negotiating for himself in a contract year. We've been saying it every year. Is this the year he's going to decline? Is this the year he starved it off? I really believe Russian machine never breaks and he's going to score a ton of goals this season.
And 18-1, right? That's a, you know, a lot of our listeners understand that you can always play out of it too. Like they can get to a certain position. You can play certain things. It's about determining value.
Yeah. But that's why I picked it.
Right. No, but if you get these lofty odds, you can sort of, it's like building a portfolio of stocks. Like you can kind of like sell positions and things like that.
Gotcha.
To kind of work off of it. So the key is for any sport going into a season, you ask yourself, is this the best I can get? And so when it's like, when it gets into the beefy odds and the long shots too, it's like, well, they make a run, then you can play out of it and things like that. Even if you don't think they're necessarily going to be hoisting the cup, although the Caps are a team that you should be able to envision that because it just happened a couple years ago. Greg, you're up again.
Sorry, I was just thinking about how beefy odds would be a great name for a podcast. So I'm looking at two teams in the West Division. We should have said off the top, by the way, in case people don't know, the National Hockey League has realigned for this season because of the travel problems at the Canadian border. They moved all these teams around. All the Canadian teams are playing in their own division, and they moved some other teams around. One of the teams they moved were the Minnesota Wild into what is now called the West Division, where the California teams are, Colorado, Vegas, Arizona. So here's the deal. I think you concede three playoff spots in that division to the Vegas Golden Knights, the Colorado Avalanche, and the St. Louis Blues, who also make the jump into that division. I think those three are concrete as far as getting into the playoffs. Then you got that fourth spot because they're taking the top four from each division. The Minnesota Wild last year were one of the best defensive teams analytically. They improved their goaltending by signing Cam Talbot. They bring in Kirill Kaprizov, who's a Russian rookie from the KHL. Is expected to be a challenger for rookie of the year, a dynamic offensive player, offense their Achilles heel last year. They're plus 120 right now to make the playoffs. And I think that's a real interesting wager because they could be the favorite to grab that fourth spot. But if you're looking for a little value, how about the resurrection of the San Jose Sharks? They're plus 210. They bring over Devin Dubnyk from the Wild. And that could improve their goaltending off of last season, which was their Achilles heel. But it was injuries that really undid their season, Doug. And if Logan Couture, Thomas Hertl, and especially Erik Karlsson are back at full capacity this year, there's a chance they could squeeze another playoff appearance out of this group. I really think the fourth spot in that division comes down to San Jose or the Minnesota Wild. And right now they're both on the plus side as far as whether or not they'll qualify for the playoffs.
Yeah, and you don't even need to do equal amounts, like equal unit or whatever terminology bettors want to use. You can do shaded a little bit so you stand to gain a little more with the Sharks, but it doesn't have to be totally the same investment. So I like that. It's you're basically creating your own prop. If you do that, you basically create a prop and then you have to add the odds and kind of do all the math, but you basically create your own prop of will the Sharks or Wild be the fourth playoff team? And there's an outside chance that both make the playoffs, right? There's that if you look at the bell curve, like the edges of the bell curve, where like the small percentage of it's 3%, 5% that both can cash. So there are ways to kind of massage things, especially if you can look at other books and get even higher odds. Maybe it's one plus 140, another book, like a rogue book, and you can sort of build your, like I said, a portfolio earlier. So there's smart ways to do that. I really like that thinking outside the box.
That's a good point because, again, like Vegas and Colorado, barring catastrophe, I think those two teams are absolutely going to be playoff teams. They're cup contenders. St. Louis is the one that's a little bit wonky. You know, their goaltending, there's a little bit of more of a question mark about it this year. You don't quite know what you have in Jordan Binnington. They lost their captain, Alex Pietrangelo, to Vegas, no less. They bring in Torrey Krug. There's a little bit more mystery about the Blues this year as far as them being a, you know, complete inked in playoff team. I still think they are, but you're right. If you want to go and make this your sharky wild prop, it's the Blues that might be the apple that falls from the tree.
Yeah. You just don't know. And like, we're seeing it at the NBA, like there's like new coachings and new things shake things up. And speaking to my next pick is going to be the Leafs over 68.5. I mean, last year they had such a slow start, right? It was pretty surprising. 9-10-4. Fire their head coach, start to play better, shake things up a little bit. They've added veterans. I think Austin Matthews is poised for a big step forward. So I like that one over 68.5. Puck Daddy, am I crazy there?
No, I think that division, the North division, shakes out like this. It's a sandwich. You got a piece of bread. Maybe it's a little bit moldy in Ottawa at the bottom. You got this beautiful, you know, it's the bread that's got the everything baked.
I like Ottawa.
Oh, you like Ottawa? Well, you know what?
I think they could compete hard.
They could be scrappy. They could be scrappy. But then you have that piece of bread that's like got the everything bagel seasoning from Trader Joe's on it.
That's
the Leafs. So tasty. Yeah. So tasty. So I think you're right that the Leafs are, by consensus, the team that we all think is going to win that division. And the other, you know, we talk about all these weird intangibles about the way the season is set up. Doug, you got a division where you have one team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and every single team in that division wanting to take them down a peg because they all play in Canada. And they're all sick of the Leafs being the center of the hockey universe. So it's like a Tuesday night game for the Leafs against Florida. Who cares? Every single game is going to be intense and meaningful because you have all of Canada that hates the Leafs and the attention they get trying to get one over on them. So I think the intensity helps Toronto, to be quite candid. But keep that in mind that there's no off night for the Leafs in this division.
That's a great point. Yeah, I'll just rip through the North. Calgary, Edmonton, Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, Vancouver, and Winnipeg. Yeah, national bragging rights. And being that they're north of the border, they have their own sort of like just little inner rivalries. That's a great point. I did not consider that one. So good food for thought, especially if you see things start a certain way out of the gates. Maybe something to react accordingly, especially in these games. Game to game night, people listening that night to night basis, you can fire some bets as well. Emily, you have an MVP play for us to wrap things up.
I do. So as you guys might have been able to infer by my earlier comments, I don't know betting that well. I do know hockey well, and the one thing I definitely know well is hockey writers, and we are the ones that vote on awards. And I'm probably oversharing my hand here, but you can start to see some tendencies. For example, when it comes to the Norris Trophy, often we overvalue offensive point totals. And we often like to think, who is due? And that's why you get Mark Giordano or Roman Josi winning that award when you're like, or Victor Hedman, you're like, their best seasons might have already been in the past. For MVP, though, I've got Elias Pettersson, and he's at 20-1 odds right now. And we were just talking about that North Division. It's technically the Scotiabank North Division. I won't say that ever again. And the Leafs are obviously the favorite to make the playoffs. And Vancouver is one of those teams that's on the bubble. They showed a lot of promise last year. They lost some pieces, but they're young and scrappy. And if you look at trends in the past with MVP votes, you've got like Taylor Hall in 2018, Nathan MacKinnon when he was a finalist in 18 and 20, Artemi Panarin last year when he was a finalist. Often it's the star player who drags his less talented or underachieving team to the playoffs. And Elias Pettersson is so the real deal. According to Evolving Hockey, they do this game above replacement metric. It's pretty much war. He ranks second to only Artemi Panarin last year. I really think that this guy is the number one center. He drives so much offense. He could enamor the voters and could make a run, especially if Vancouver makes the playoffs. I think it's because Pettersson lifted them there.
I love it. And we talked about it most recently with the Heisman and then the NFL MVP. We were kept talking about Aaron Rodgers, this and that, even when he wasn't the favorite. I was like, guys, there's voter fatigue with Mahomes a little bit. Mm-hmm. They want to give it to Rodgers. And then sure enough, Rodgers did enough to kind of the baton was passed. But yeah, you have to handicap voters as much as you handicap the player. So I'm all on board on that. That's awesome. I love it. And that's a nice, as Wyszynski's favorite band, Beefy Odds. on that one at payout there. You have a 20-to-1 Stanley Cup pick, a 20-to-1 MVP pick. That's what we like. We like our value. That's what we always talk about, especially early on. And, you know, you ask yourself, is this going to go up or down the odds? And that's how people sort of build portfolios, if you will. Guys, this was a lot of fun. I know I talk to Puck Daddy all the time, but Emily, you fit right in, making fun of Greg, knowing your hockey, like you said, and you're one of us now. Unfortunately for you, you're one of us.
Well, I appreciate that, and it was fun. I just love hearing Greg giggle. That's all I do it for. Listen to that giggle.
We all yes. do.
It's always good, and usually it's a giggle of nerves after I've made a wager on Daily Wager and realized, my goodness, what have I done?
Well, we have a lot of fun on the show, and we're looking forward to hearing from you. And Emily, hopefully we get you on the show soon, too. I know you said you weren't a guru, but you know your hockey, and that's all that matters. We can glean the wisdom and then apply it on the betting board.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, guys. Thanks so much, and enjoy the season. Look forward to watching and reading your work.
Thanks, Doug.
Appreciate it.
Pay that man his money.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Behind the Bets. Thanks to both Emily and Greg, a.k.a. the Puck Daddy, and then also, of course, David Purdom, always a source and just a ton of information in there. So it's good to get him on. And we'll resume, I believe, Wednesday or Thursday, looking ahead to the weekend. So thanks to everyone for that. And I want to thank everyone who wrote back and also just listened and watched the megacast with the NFL Live crew. I thought it was awesome. The feedback was really positive. So thanks, everyone. And just, it was a pleasure to do kind of, you know, new frontier, if you will, to discuss betting lines during an NFL game. I had a great time with Tyler and Joe's. I always do. And then really the NFL Live crew did a great job with analytics and the punt by Vrabel, things like that. So it was really fun to do it. But Laura Rutledge, Dan Orlovsky, Mina Kimes, and Marcus Spears did a fantastic job. We had done some rehearsals, so I knew they would, but it was nice to just execute it on that Sunday morning. And I hope there's more opportunities to come, but I really appreciate everyone listening in and having a great time with that, because we thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was a good game too, with the Ravens and Titans, really interesting game, 10-0, the comeback for Baltimore after that deficit. So thanks to everyone. Thanks to the guests. And we'll see you back here later in the week. And good luck tonight in the national championship game. Only 8 more football games, I believe.